The Fall Estate has new merchandise available. Every purchase goes right back to the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Mama Mia, hola, y señor. Get off that stage, boy. Quit monkeying around.
It's amazing. The merch is amazing.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
I am Jesse Lee Peterson. I have with me today a former UFC heavyweight champion, Boss Rutten. He is an MMA legend and UFC Hall of Fame. Thank you for coming, man.
You're welcome. The legend is just a really nice way to say I'm old. That's what they did. We started all the way back in 93, so.
That's amazing. Yeah. I didn't know a lot about MMA. I know about it now because I've interviewed people, but you've had a very amazing life.
Yeah.
So I read that you, when you were a kid, you were kind of sickly, right?
Yeah, I was very sick. I had rheumatic fever at 4. And then when we moved the house, we went from a big city to a small village. And that's when I came out of my mom, I was completely covered with eczema.
Yeah.
But I went away and I came back when I was 6. With a, like, completely everywhere. And then also, that went hand in hand with rheumatic fever. So I either had really bad asthma,
yeah,
or I had really bad skin disease, you know? So if the skin disease is really bad, my asthma would be okay.
Yeah.
But if my asthma would be bad, my skin would be okay. So it was going back and forth, whatever I liked.
I remember seeing kids that way in my school when I was going to school. Once in a while, you see a kid with that. What caused that? What caused that?
It's just the allergy that you have, allergy, you know? So that's nothing. Cats, dogs. And I mean, if I would play with a cat for half an hour, then the next day I would be 8 days in bed. Because that I couldn't breathe. Like people, I always laugh and people go, oh, my asthma is acting up. I go, dude, like, not able to eat, not able to drink. I mean, putting a cloth in your mouth because otherwise you're chewing your lung. And that 24/7. So it was pretty rough, yeah.
Did it just finally go away? How did you overcome it?
Yeah, you grow out of it, you know. And some people don't. That's how I dealt always with how I dealt with all these things, you know. I knew that, like, I have eczema in my arms and my hands and my neck, but not really in my face. And I knew there were people who had it completely everywhere.
I've seen that, yeah.
And it's the same with the asthma attack. I had it for 8 days, like every 6 or 5 weeks I had it, but I knew there were people who had it 365 days a year. So I was always focusing on those people. I go, it's not as bad. That's how I myself above.
That's a good. And so I read that the kids, some of the kids would bully you in school.
Yeah.
And how did you deal with that?
Well, I always somehow, I come from a very athletic family, so they're all gymnasts and track and field from my dad's side. So my genetics were always really good, so I was strong. So they were messing me, but, you know, if there was a fight, I never lost. I was only one move. I actually was thinking about that yesterday evening before I went to sleep. But I go, oh, my Lord, the first fight style I knew was actually a submission game. And that's weird because I started as a striker in fighting, and then later I learned the submission, the ground fighting game. But my first move, I remember, I closed the distance, grabbed someone by the head, put his head under here so his body's behind me, and then I started shaking him as hard as I could until they would quit. And it always worked. So I go, wait a minute, why didn't I do that? Why didn't I start with that when I later started to fight?
Were you afraid to fight at all when you were a kid?
No, because, you know, once I was fighting, it was so much anger, you know.
Right.
I mean, if they pay, it's continually on a daily basis, they say things. And that's way worse, actually, than a fight. Words. I mean, I have still trigger words that will trigger me till this day that I really, you know, now I know how to deal with it. But
right.
10 years ago, that person had a problem. I go, excuse me, you're gonna apologize. You know, now I got much more calm.
So tell me one of your trigger words so I won't use it today.
Oh, now let's not do that. Because then we're throwing it out in the open and then people are going to start to. So on social media, you know how people are.
Yeah. You know? They sure would. They start using it every time they see you. It'll be all over the media, social media.
If they want to make some money, you know, because chances are I'm going to hit them. Guess who's going to get sued? This guy right there.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so today, there are laws against bullies in schools, and kids don't know how to deal with bullies today in school. What do you say about that? Kids that don't know how to deal with it, so they have to pass laws against the bully rather than encouraging the kids to stand up for themselves.
Yeah, the whole world is backwards nowadays.
Yeah, it is.
It's with everything.
I mean, when I was going to school, we were taught to deal with the bully.
Oh, yeah.
We weren't taught to run away and you have to pass the law against the bully.
No, it's... you know, people say stay away from the violence, but it's the only language those kids understand. Because trust me, I tried talking.
Yeah.
And then once I saw a Bruce Lee movie, and I realized, wait a minute, if I become like that guy, and it took 2 years for me to convince my parents to fight, I start Taekwondo. That was the only sport at the time that was available in my town. But I started training with the adults. I was taken under the wing by the boyfriend of my neighbor. They were beautiful neighbor girls, and of course she had the coolest guy in town.
Right.
Xavier was his name, and he took me under his wing, and then I started training with the adults, and within 2 or 3 months I started dropping the adults. So then I overheard them talking about me in the dressing room. Oh my God, the kid, boss, did you see me? Drop Jack with a spinning back kick to the body, and everybody was laughing. So then it started slowly but surely, I started listening that I did something good, because before that, it was always bad. I was negative. You were nobody or nothing.
Yeah.
And then suddenly the adults started talking, and then I got into a fight with the biggest bully in my school. And they came by on their bicycles, and always laugh about this. I was on my bicycle also. And the whole of actually, everybody rides a bicycle. It's like 99% of the population does it. It's the best way of transport. Anyway, right. They shouted, hey, leper, whatever it was. It was always something along those lines. And this time I shouted something back. And I heard them laugh, and I looked back, and sure enough, they took a U-turn. They started chasing me, but I put my bike on the stand. And I said, no, I'm going to face it this time. I'm not going to run anymore.
Right on.
And that was it. They surrounded me with like 6 kids, and then the biggest, Shucky, that was his name, he came over, and he started bumping his chest against my chest and asking me if I wanted to hit him. So I obliged, and and I realized that he wasn't really that strong, because it was 1 point, he was knocked out.
Yeah.
But his nose was flat on his face, so that meant that he had to go to the hospital, police got alarmed. That meant that the police came on my mom and dad's doorstep, so they took me off.
How old were you at the time?
14.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And so you grew up in Holland, right?
Yes.
What's the difference between living in America and living in Holland?
Well, that's a socialist country, you know, so if you enjoy paying 65% taxes, that's a great way to go there. But the people are super, super friendly people, very nice. It's very open. Culture shock for me when I came here with the racism that goes on. We don't have that. I mean, I'll take black jokes in front of black people, and the black people tell white jokes, and everybody's laughing. I've never on the planet somebody would get offended by it, ever. I've been doing it my entire life. So when I came here and I saw that, I go like, whoa, that's kind of weird. You know, that was the biggest culture shock for me.
Yeah.
You know, because you watch TV, you see, you don't really have it, but then you come here and it's pretty
prominent.
That's
new in America too, because when I was growing up, you can make jokes with anybody about anything.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a race issue or any of that kind of stuff. That just came the last 70 years or so.
Yeah.
It should not be, but it's new in America.
You know, everything nowadays, you can't say anything anymore, right?
Right, but I say it anyway. Ridiculous.
It's a shame.
Are you afraid to say certain things?
No, I'm not. You know, but I'll make sure that I very articulate myself that it comes out the correct way.
Yeah.
Because everything is spinned nowadays into something negative. And you have to really watch out. Many times I do an interview, and the headline says, boss would have said this and this, which I didn't say, but it's an audio interview or a video interview. And then I got this bombarded with these people trying to trash. I said, just listen to the interview.
Yeah.
Why would you listen? Because that's just clickbait. You know, they want you to click on it. That's why they make a crazy headline. And of course, they all come back, well, 50% do it. I'm so sorry. I go, yeah, just listen to what I said before you say something. But people don't do it anymore. Yeah. They read the headlines. And that's truth to them. You know, and then they start spreading that same message to everybody else. And if they just also assume that is true, now you have a rumor that comes out of nowhere.
That's right.
What is absolutely not true.
Yeah.
And then try to deal with that. So, that's a little weird.
It's hard to prove a lie. Because once people believe a lie, it seems like it's hard to convince them that it's a lie.
Oh, yeah, but the smoke is fire, yeah.
People tend to love lies over truth. Yep. They hold on to a lie, but they...
But it's with everything. It's with the negativity, everything. If you go on Twitter, you got 500 great messages, one asshole in between. Guess where your focus is going to be, right? Yeah. Everybody's going to go to that. I say, flip it around. Imagine you had 500 bad messages and one good one. You're going to focus on the good one? No, still with the negative. So people are always drawn to the negativity. Look at the news.
Yeah, no, you're right.
I mean, I don't watch news at night because I can't sleep.
Yeah.
Because it's like, if I see the horrible things that people do, it's just, it's not healthy anymore.
So you grew up with both parents?
Yes.
And they supported you practicing martial arts?
No. They were very against it because they're very conservative people, and they always thought it was violence, and which was confirmed, of course, when I knocked out the bully. Now, I have to say, my mom had so much work with me. Like, for my eczema, every night they would put on the creams. My family would send in bed sheets that they would rip up to bandages, and then we would mummify me. That was what we called it. In the middle of the night, I would scratch everything off because of the itch. I had, like, a big tile next to my bed that I was hitting the whole time because, you prefer the pain over the itching. It drove me nuts. And I had to do it again. So my mom had a lot of work with me. So I never told them I was bullied. That came out later when I started fighting and the interview started coming. My mom and dad go like, you were bullied. We didn't know. I said, I didn't want to bother you with that.
That's amazing.
So, yeah.
At what point did they accept and were proud of what you were doing?
It took a while. It was when I became a professional, when I started fighting in Japan, because then suddenly it was, the newspapers came and I came on TV and then people started following me. Like, for instance, a news crew came over and they followed me for a day. Mm. And then my mom saw what actually goes into training. You got to wake up, you got to eat right, you got to do this. I mean, it's military style,
right.
Things that you have to do. There is no drinking, there's no partying, there's no, you got to have to be laser focused. And, once she saw that, she realized, oh my Lord, this is a real sport. And that's when they came around, and of course, family members, everybody, because they work on the street. Rutan, you're the boss with this, my son. Oh, is this your son? Oh my God. And then people would start, oh my God.
Yeah.
My mother was like, what the heck's going on? She didn't know.
Amazing. But,
it was really cool to see.
How old is your son?
No, I have a grandson. He's almost four. I've got three girls, ladies, 29, 23, like 3 days ago, and 18.
Oh, okay. But you have a grandson, not a son.
Yeah, grandson.
So do you wish you had a son so that he could follow your footsteps?
On the one side, when the second baby came, I wanted a boy for that reason. But then when they asked me, what do you want? I said, actually, I would be really happy with another girl because they're so cute. And, I'm always correct. My wife is always wrong, but it's always daddy is right. Always good. So I really enjoyed that. And now later, I'm kind of happy about it because I think there's a lot of pressure on the kid. If he's a son of mine and everybody's going to expect him to be a fighter, and so I don't know if he really wants to fight or if he's doing it for me to help me with it, that I like him more. So maybe it's better that I had girls.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking about you today and I wondered, I know that you're retired now and you did very well ending that career. What is it like for you now not to be an MMA fighter?
It took a while. It's very hard. You have to replace that feeling because it's very euphoric. I mean, listen, there's 20,000 people. You knock somebody out, people go nuts. It's very hard to find something else that gives you that
right.
same feeling.
Yeah.
And training, I just miss the training so much. I had four neck surgeries, so and my kneecaps. I have no cartilage on my kneecaps. It sounds easy, but it's the worst problem you can have in the knee because they can't replace it.
Right.
Everything else you can do, not the kneecap.
Yeah.
So if I'm on the ground now, like rolling, going for submissions, like judo, jiu-jitsu, that, I love that. That's something I miss the most because the connections, every time when you train, you find out new things. And I've been doing for 20 years. You go like, no, this is so crazy. Every time, every single time, you've come up with something new. And it's endless, the combination. That's why I always say to families, put your kids in there. Because once they get the bug, so to say, and they start realizing what they can do with the setups that you have to create, it's really good for the brain development.
I was going to ask about that. Being an MMA fighter, do you have to be mentally strong and aware?
For me, always calmness worked the best.
Yeah.
I'm a really, nobody can speak up in my dressing room. You're going to do this, you're out. It's going to be because I'm a hothead already. So if somebody hits me and I lose control, that's the worst thing that can happen. So I'm always relax. Right. So, it needs great focus. And MMA, there's many ways that you can win, but it automatically means there's many ways that you can lose as well. You make one little mistake, and you're caught in something. If you forget to hang an arm out there for while you're booked, there's an armbar, or there's a triangle choke, or there's a side choke. I mean, the combinations are endless, you know, and then the different setups to certain combinations, you know. If you don't know a certain setup, if you can create a setup that the best ground fighter on the planet doesn't know yet, you will catch him with it. But you will catch him once. That will never happen because he's the best guy. But if he doesn't know, you might be lucky and you catch him with it. And that's the cool thing about the submission game. I mean,
are you surprised that you had such success in your career doing what you did?
No, I was always a great athlete. But, you know, thankfully, I always put myself in the number two spot because I always thought that somebody would train harder than me. And that was the way for me to motivate myself to train even harder than them. What I was surprised about is that I was a great striker. So I knocked the first two guys out in Japan, and the third guy took me down. He put me in a submission. It was called a toe hold. Now, don't let that name fool you, because I saw somebody break a shin bone with a toe hold. It's like a twist on your ankle that they do. It's very painful. I knew that, but I didn't know what it was. And then I lost later on. I won a few more fights by knockout, but I realized I had to learn the ground game, because then after my third loss with the ground game, I just became very angry with myself and said, okay, it's either I learn this game or I'm going to quit. You know, I might get lucky one time, knock somebody out, but I think if you become a champion, you should defend your title. Then you're a real champion.
That's right.
You know, so if I'm lucky and then I lose the next time by submission, that would be stupid. So, but then I started focusing on it, and somehow I fell in love with it and I became obsessed with it. And my poor wife, I mean, I would wake her up in the middle of the night. I would dream a submission, make her up, put her in that submission. And I said, your arm is hurting, right? Your shoulder, right? Yeah. And I would write it down, and the next day I would try it out in training. And I got so obsessed, I never lost a fight again. I lost three fights by submission. As soon as I started learning, 3 months later, I started fighting again. Well, it was 2.5 months, I think. And I won my next 8 fights by submission. And then I never lost again. So my last 22 fights, I never lost. And it was just because I focused on the ground game. I knew nobody was going to stand with me, so let's do this 3 times a day, only that. And then I became a master.
So I wonder, are there any, when you look back on your career, are there moments where you say, wow, that was pretty cool? You had like those moments like, I can't believe that happened.
You know, there was one time, we always would go to the gym in Japan to just roll around before the fight, you know, so a little workout is good for the jet lag. And there were a whole bunch of Americans, which I always thought they were here, and I was here in my level.
Right.
And when I start rolling with them, I start tapping them. And actually pretty easy, and I go, whoa, this is crazy. And that's, I remember when I came home, that's when I told my wife, I said, you know what, I think I'm going to be a world champion because I'm much better than I thought I was.
Amazing.
You know, and that was it. And that set the whole thing in motion. And
have you ever tapped out?
Yeah, I did on the toe hold. and on a knee bar. And on a knee bar from a Ken Shamrock. The knee bar is a hyperextension of your leg. So the leg can only go this far, then they bring the lower leg here.
Oh.
So, well, if you don't tap, you're going to break your leg. Yeah. You know, so, yeah, that was awesome.
So when you're down on the floor, and I often wonder this about people who end up on the floor and the person's holding them down there and keeping them down. What are you thinking while you're there? I feel embarrassed down here. I got to get out of here.
No, it's a game, you know. I just wait for one mistake. I throw a lot of baits out, you know. Like, for instance, if somebody's on top of me and I want him to put his arm around my neck, I just lean back and I start breathing heavy.
Oh.
You know, and then most of the time, those people, they see a submission, they go around your neck, which is the worst thing you can do if you're on top, because as soon as you put an arm around my neck, let's say your right arm goes around my neck, if I push you to that side, you have no base now. So if then I can lock your leg, the only thing I have to is push you to the side, and now I'm on top. So, you know, you can bait people like that. I never understood that nobody was doing it. I did things with really good submission fighters that would sit on top of me, and I go, man, how do I get them off? I go, oh, I know, I'll do this. Because if I do this, I know they're going to go for an armbar. Because my hands are locked, but they will figure out later how to break my grip.
Right.
You know, but I know that they're going to do it. So I was just doing this, so I know they go for an armbar. And
amazing.
As soon as they go for it, I would return, and now I'm in a better position. You know, so just little setups.
But I don't think most people think that way when they're down on the floor.
Yeah.
They're not thinking about, how do I get out of here?
Well, this is the thing. For me, it was, there was no wrestling in Holland. So there's maybe three wrestling schools in Holland. So wrestling, not like here in school, everybody knows wrestling. So I didn't know how to wrestle. So I knew I either got to be very good on the ground and on the feet. And this is funny, actually, because in 2015, when you said it with the Hall of Fame induction, they had a stat in there. And they said that I did attempted 53 submissions, yet I never took one person down. So that meant that that person took me down, I will reverse him, and then we'll put him in a submission.
Yeah.
You see, and I thought that was a cool stat, because normally, you know, the submission guys go for the takedowns, and then, but I never did. I was just striking, they take me down, reverse him, and then go for a submission. So,
that's amazing.
You know,
so you finish a career on a 22-fight win streak.
Yeah.
So you must have felt pretty good then, finishing in that way.
Yeah.
At least you didn't finish as a loser. You finished as a winner.
Yeah, I think God gave me a bunch of injuries, and he did it on purpose to say, because I'm a knucklehead, you know, I think I can still fight now.
You look pretty strong now.
So I feel good. But, you know, the fact of the matter is those guys, they're going to come up, and they're upcoming. They started training when they were 12 years old. Now they're 22. They're all 10 years in, super young, and the stamina. You are going to lose eventually.
Right.
You know, but because of my injuries, I had to quit. And I see many other fighters from my era. You know, if you look at the records, great records, and then the last 11 losses, the last 7 losses, because they can't let it go. Because fighting is so addicting, it's such a great feeling to be there. And I know I would have done that, but thankfully, because of my injuries.
So you had all these injuries and you had to quit. Did your ego want to continue anyway? You know, like,
bad. Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, I was lucky I did some pro wrestling over in Japan. Like, the pro wrestling here is really different. The pro wrestling in Japan, they call it strong style. And that means they use real submission moves. Like here in America, clotheslines and all these mafia kicks, that they will never work in a real fight. You know, and so I didn't know these things, but I know all the real moves. So for me, to just hold back and let him escape here and there. But the first 3 matches, I broke a disc in my back. The second one, I ruptured an eyeball. I had a blind spot here for like 3 months or 6 months. And my third one, I broke my eardrum. I came home, my wife says, why don't you go back to real fighting? You never had those injuries with real fighting. You have them with pro wrestling.
Wow.
Yeah, it's because in pro wrestling, you let yourself get hit. You know, because that looks great for the guy hit me with a flat hand on my ear. Yeah, your eardrum pops. Normally, I simply block it. But if it's in the script that I'm going to have to take the hit, I'll take the hit, you see? So
was it all worth it to have all those pains and injuries?
Yeah, no, it was worth it. You know, New Japan Pro Wrestling, you have to understand, I did it in the Tokyo Dome. We got 55,000 people. I mean, they play indoor baseball there.
Yeah.
You know, and to be there in front of 55,000 people, it's great. It's almost like real fighting. You see actually really good pro wrestlers from Japan. Sakuraba, for instance, he's the guy who put Japan on the map with mixed martial arts. He beat like 3 or 4 Gracies, who at the time were the best fighters. And that was a pro wrestler. But he was used to the strong style, so he knew all the real submission moves. So for him making the transition, well, he performed in front of thousands of people on a weekly basis, so he was not nervous at all. Plus, he knew all the moves. He came in and he started beating the best guys on the planet.
Are the wrestlers in Japan, are they smarter than the rest of the world in wrestling?
In pro wrestling? Well, you know, you get some really smart people there also. I think... But people see, when you see Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, with the beer and he's drinking and that. You meet Stone Cold, he's a very smart guy.
Yeah.
You know, they play a certain part. They play the heel. The heel is the bad guy, right? Or you play the good guy. Now, both guys get people in the seats, of course. And if you're a good heel, look at Conor McGregor in mixed martial arts, right? Everybody knows this guy. If you know Trump, you know Conor McGregor. You know, it's like that big how he is.
Yeah.
So playing a bad guy, because if you interview Conor McGregor, you find out he's a really good guy, family man, he's a really nice guy. But once the camera turns on, becomes another person.
So you opened up an MMA gym. How's that going? And do you personally train, or do you have hire people to train others?
No, I because it's called Basswood's Elite MMA. It's in Westlake Village. And since the name is on the building, I didn't want to be one of those guys who, you know, there's a lot of people out there, they use a name, but that person is never there.
Right.
And I said, I'm not going to happen. So I teach 2 days a week. Actually, straight from this interview, I will drive home 6 o'clock on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I teach.
Men today are more, you know, they're weaker than men of our days, right? They're softer.
100%.
Mommy's boy, like beta boys, right?
Yeah.
The guys that are coming in, do they already have the mindset of being tough, or do you have to teach them to be tough?
No, the mindset is there. You have it or you don't have it. But you know, the fake guys have it. They see it on TV. They're good in bar fighting, and everybody tells them they're going to be the next champion. They come in, and they get demolished, you know, by kids. Yeah. I mean, if you don't know, I mean, my first ground fighting class, and I was a badass striker at the time. I mean, I knocked a lot of people out, you know, pretty everybody. All in the first round, I was just destroying people, and then I went to submissions. Well, I remember I had to park my car next to the road coming back from Amsterdam to my town because I live in the south. I couldn't move. I called my wife. I saw one of these big old cell phones that they just came out. I said, I'm sleeping in the car. I came completely crushed. You know, they schooled me. And when the next day I came home, she was laughing. And she goes, so that's it for your free fighting? Because that's what they called it at the time. I go, no, that's not it. I said, within 6 months, I'm going to tap all these guys. You watch. And I did.
Right. You know, that's amazing.
Yeah, but it's just... Just somebody asked me about how do the submission game, just to somebody on Twitter. I say, you have to fall in love with it.
Yeah.
Because if you fall in love with something, you become obsessed about it and you want to do it all day long. And once you do something all day long, there's no other way. You're becoming good. You know, so I'm always blown away. I know some fighters who hate training. I go, dude, that's a tough job then. I would look forward to go to train. Almost couldn't sleep, so excited. 7 o'clock in the morning, oh, I'm gonna try out my new submissions. I would love it, you know. So that's why it was so hard for me to step away. Yeah. Not particularly for the fighting, but for the training. I always enjoyed the workout so much.
Right on. Do you believe your talent was a gift from God?
Oh yeah, everything is a gift from God. I'm 100%. Yeah, no, I'm a big believer in that.
But you
have to recognize what it is, you know, and you have to go with that. It's like the book The Alchemist, you know, by Paulo Coelho. It's one of my favorite books. I read it like 7 times, 8 times, but every time you find something new, it's a book that's translated in, next to the Bible, the most translated book on the planet. Over 70 million copies. I mean, something is going on with
the
book.
What's the name of it again?
The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. Yeah. I mean, you'll see every famous person, so I figured I'd read it too. And it's a book about a sheep herder who goes look for his personal legend. But the way they explain it, you fit on the way omens. And the omens are things that you have to recognize. A certain person that you meet in life, you meet that person for a reason. God set that up. You know, if you just wipe it off, you maybe missed a big chance now. Right. But if you invest... You see, and that's how that book teaches you that by reading a normal story. It's like really amazing how the writer did that. And that really changed me also, because now you start looking for these omens.
Absolutely. You know? I totally understand that. I asked that because I think I read that you were an atheist or something.
No, I'm a devout Catholic.
You always a Catholic.
I've always been a Catholic, but I came back 5 years ago.
So you left that religion or something?
Yeah, my parents didn't. You know, at 12, they stopped going to church because they said, yeah, well, we don't do it on the weekends anymore. Now we do it on the Christmas. You know, it's a charade. We're not going to do it anymore. So I was always the same as other people. You know, you say the same stupid stuff. They show what the priest to do, blah, blah, you know. But, you know, once you get invested in it and you learn the truth, you know, there is no other way.
Yeah.
Listen, people freak out when they hear. I spend... an hour and a half, 2 hours a day on it. I go daily mass. I wake up in the morning, it's an hour and a half, it starts with that. But I do stretching in between while I'm doing prayers, while I'm doing things. It just completely changed me. I'm just much better. My wife loves me much better. Because I became so much more calm.
I'm going to ask you about that. You seem pretty tense. Well, you don't necessarily seem tense, but you look like you could be.
Yeah.
So if I was walking down the road, I saw you coming, I would say hello because I wouldn't want to be.
You know, the thing is this, that's what always people think. You can go online, you know, you ask about me. It's very hard to get me in a fight. And I'm the one guy who I'll take a lot, which I shouldn't do sometimes. So if they push, and suddenly I realize, wait a minute, because they start making jokes, and it goes deeper, deeper. And then suddenly I realize that they believe, he is a tough guy, but he's not really that tough. And then I stop the conversation, I go like, are you thinking I'm not tough? Is this why you're doing it? And the guy looks at me and says, don't do it because it's going to go wrong. You're going to lose this.
Yeah.
Don't overstep your boundaries. I don't do that with you. You don't do that to me. It's very simple. So for me to get a fight, I was a bouncer in Holland. I was one of the most well-liked bouncers because they knew that from the 10 fights, it's only one time if I'm there.
Right.
Because I'll break it up. I go over this, I break the situation down. And then already they're looking like, oh, yeah, this is really stupid. I said, what are you guys drinking? You know, you're in a handicap, but whatever. I give him a beer, shake hands, boom, and there was no fight. And I could do that. I had good people skills. So everybody wanted me as their bouncer because the winner fights. If I'm standing at the door, people go, hey, boss, all night long I'm shaking hands at people because, you know, I'm just a people person. But they also know that if something happens, you know, if a real guy hit an ashtray in a girl's face, you know, now I'm going to make sure everybody will see what I'm doing. And I'll make it as destructive as possible, headbutts, you know, like very scary stuff that all the people who are seeing it go like, I don't want to fight that guy, you know, but it happened. Not a lot.
You know how a lot of why you're married. You know how women love to get on your nerves and make you angry and mess with you. Is your wife afraid to do that with you?
Oh no, my wife controls me if she wants, but she is the perfect wife for me.
Oh okay.
Yeah, no.
But she could control you.
Oh no, it is the yin and yang. You know, that's with us, literally. I'm that guy, and she's calming me down the whole time. You know, she's. She's really the rock in my thing. It's really amazing. We never fight. There's no fighting in our home. It's a very calm house. And it comes from my parents. I never seen my parents fight, not once, ever. So
your wife is from Holland as well?
From Holland as well. Yeah, we're 27 years together.
Really? Oh, you've been married for 27 years.
Yeah.
And so you believe in God.
Oh, yes.
And what is it to believe in God? What is it like?
Oh, well, you just look around. You look around you. If you these people come to me, they say, oh, these guys are stupid. They think we were created. And I go like, I think you're the idiot. If you think this all came from one cell, well, I'm laughing at you. It is the dumbest thing ever. Yeah, now they're backtracking. Now it's only 112 cells or 256. What, megabytes we're doing this now? Is it 256, 512? I mean, it makes no sense. Every time they come up with something new, nobody knows.
Right.
What I do know is that I remember... The way I got back into the faith was really, I remember one instance from my childhood, very vivid, in class. And I was staring outside the window. And I was looking at a tree, but they didn't know. And I heard everybody was talking. And the teachers, the people were laughing. And then suddenly, right now, and I go, what? And he goes, what are you doing? I go, I'm looking at that tree. And he goes, what about that tree? I said, how did it get there? He said, they planted it there, stupid. I said, no, that's not what I mean. Where do trees come from? If you go all the way back. Now, 5 years ago, I was sitting in on a talk from a Catholic person who was talking, and the way he explained it as a God, the leaf fell from the tree. And the leaf falls on the ground, that's the end destination. Now let's start backtracking that leaf, go back to the branch, and then the tree before. And I go, because once he did that the flash came back when it was like God planted the seed in me when I was 10 years old. It was the fourth grade when this thing happened. Why would I remember that so vivid? And then suddenly that person comes. Now, you also have to understand, I've been attacked by a ghost like 6-7 times in the house. Very scary.
You were attacked by a ghost?
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
Oh, they in my sleep. And I know people go with sleep paralysis. Paralysis? Right. Paralysis, yeah. In Holland, you say paralysis. We have a different way of pronouncing it. Right. Completely pushed in the bed, not able to move, not able to dig. A very bad presence. Completely incapacitating me.
Oh, yeah,
and the only way I could get out was to get mentally very aggressive. And suddenly I would get out and I would scream. And, you know, I used language at the time. I don't do this now. And then I would wake up. But, I mean, my kids seen her. It was a woman. I was one day I came in the house and I with my family around 9 o'clock. And I told them, I said, wait, there's somebody in the house. I truly believe somebody was in the house. And there was how do I explain that? There was two rooms, a kitchen there, dining room there, and in the back is the kitchen. And it was separated by a wall. And in the dining room, you had a doorpost with a thick curtain instead of a door. And I figured the guy was in the kitchen. So I acted like on this side of the wall I was locking, and suddenly, because I wanted to let him come here, and I make a U-turn, I'm catch him, right? So I start sprinting the other way, and the curtain flies up against the ceiling, so I keep running. There's a person in the house. The curtain didn't move, I always say. It flew up against the ceiling, but there was nobody in the house.
Wow.
You know, and everything was closed. So that all, it was very intense.
Did that make you want to move out?
It wanted me to move out. And then we went to the next house, and my daughter wakes up. She sleeps in the attic. Because it's the biggest place. And she goes, the next day, I say, how was your night? She goes, it's great. You know, I had some visits from two boys and two girls. And I go, excuse me, but she's very open to this. And I go, what? I say, what do you mean? How old? I say, 17, 18 years old. You're freaking out. And she says, no, they were nice. Yeah, one kept playing. He was bouncing on the bed the whole time. He kept on playing. I go, dude, it's so weird. So I go online. And I said, if there ever an accident happened with kids, the first link, click on the link. And I was reading, four kids, two boys, two girls, 17 and 8 years old, with a car drove through our wall. So I'm walking outside, and I see the walls completely repaired. It was right next to our home.
Wow.
So she was on everything, two boys, two girls, 17, 18 years old. It was the craziest thing.
I remember when I had anger, I was sleeping one night, and a dark black witch-like thing came through the wall of my house, right, in my room. It reminded me of the Wicked Witch of the West. You know who that is?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maxine Waters?
Yeah.
But
in character, right? Not like that.
It looked just like Maxine. And it just, it tried to hold me down in the bed, and I was trying to get up, and it wouldn't let me up. And finally, I said, "Help me, Jesus."
And that's
and
it.
And then it went away.
Yeah, I wish I would have known that at the time. I didn't do it. Yeah. What I did do, I challenged it. Because there was a chandelier where the curtain flew up. There was the dining room. There was a big chandelier. It was always cold there and a weird smell. And that's where I stood. And somehow I knew it was 3 a.m., which I didn't know. And people at home don't know. Jesus passed away at 3 p.m. So at 3 a.m., the bad activity is at its worst.
Yeah.
But somehow I knew that, which I didn't. And I just challenged that for 45 minutes. Hey,
amazing.
Listen, you're sucker punching me. Why don't you do it like this? Bring it down to the earth level, right? You know, to get, let's not, because otherwise I can't win.
That's
and let's
amazing.
See who's the toughest one. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Oh, listen, I know one of the biggest exorcists on the planet, and he looks at me and goes, "Only you, boss, you should have never done, but hey, it worked for you."
Yeah,
so.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm running out of time, and I got so much I want to talk to you about, so I'm going to move a little faster. I know that you are read that you were influenced by the actor Kevin James, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Was it because of him that you became a Catholic? Or
well,
was it the other way around?
No, it was because of him. Well, he on the set, we were shooting Mall Cop 2, and he had on the set, he had these speakers come. And we're sitting at the Wynn Hotel. Listen, this is in June. There's a cabana with air conditioning. We're smoking cigars outside in the break. And he has this guy go, "Hey, you want to sit in on that talk?" And I go, "Yeah, sure." So I sat in, and that was with the leaf fell from the tree. That was that talk. And he immediately got me. I go, "Oh, this is too wild." And then everything started falling, the attacks. And, you know, I go, "Yeah, this 100% there is something."
What is a, not a male, but a man? What is a man?
Ooh, a man is a guy who can overcome his weaknesses, vices, and imperfections. A man who's not a slave to his passions, but a real man who is in control of himself. I think that's a real man.
Do you have anger?
No, I don't have anger. You know, I do have anger at a certain point. It's very hard to get me angry.
Yeah.
But you keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing. Yeah, suddenly then I will explode.
What is
love? I don't even remember the last time.
What is love?
Love, I think love is everything. I think love is my wife, and love is what I have with my kids, and I love her every day more, and it's like we have a really great relationship, and I think everything should be about love. And
do you love all people?
I do love all people, but you know, there's of course there's people that I don't try to love, but then I say, no, I'm going to try. because you know, you have to give them a chance.
Yeah.
There's so many things that can happen. I was a crazy guy. You know, I did some really crazy stuff in my life as well, you know, and I turned around. So,
yeah, that's
you know,
right,
you,
man.
You should give everybody a chance.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. On a quick question, I'll be answer to this. Being an American citizen, right? You're an American citizen
yes.
now. What does that mean to you?
It means everything. I think I'm the biggest patriot they have over here. I love America, you know. That's why it's so disturbing to me when I've been doing it for 23 years. You remember when Trump said, "Oh, go back to your house, if your own home, if it's there better." Now she's labeled a racist, and I go, "Wow, then I guess I'm a racist for the last 22 years because I can't stand it when I'm living in this beautiful country
yeah.
that I love so much, and the people from Europe come in and they start complaining about the living." I said, "Why don't you go back to your own country?"
That's
and it doesn't
right.
matter if you're white, black, it does not.
Yeah.
It's just, and so it doesn't matter who you are. I will say that. You can be the president, you can be an old lady, it doesn't matter. Truth is truth.
That's right.
If you don't like it, go back.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I agree.
Very simple.
I totally agree. So, speaking of the great white hope, you
yeah.
know who that is, right?
Ali.
We have a new Ali.
Yeah.
The president. I call the president.
Oh, yeah.
I call him the great white hope.
Yep.
What's your impression of Donald Trump, the president?
I think the way he articulates, you know, that's, it sets people off. But I look at the results.
Yeah.
And I really, it's unbelievable that the other people don't see what he's doing. I mean, the ISIS guys caught. I mean, the wall is building. The taxes are down. The unemployment. I mean, everything. The economy is booming. I had this person start yelling, "But the economy's down. The economy's down." So you have a 401k. And he goes, "Yeah." I say, "That's really well, right?" "Yeah." I go, "How is that possible if the economy goes down? I mean, they can only grow. It dropped when Obama 35%, and now suddenly, but he brought it back 35% up." Yeah. So how can I complain about a person? I always say this, you know, I had this guy who could probably fix my knee, and everybody was warning me about him. Don't go there. He's the best guy, but he's a complete douchebag. I go, "I don't care.
Right.
If he's the best guy, I don't care. I want to get my knee fixed." And then when I walked in, he looked and he says, "I was hoping it was you." He was a big fan. So he was not a douche to me.
That's
great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Why do you think some people hate him, the Democrats, the liberal media, the rhino Republicans, the Never Trumpers, and the black race hustlers? Why do you think they hate him so much?
Because they just listen to the people. You know, this is an example that I'm using with the clickbait that I was talking about earlier in the interview. I'm sitting on the plane, and I have a little bit of time and my social media is on. And somebody on my Facebook posted that Trump says that people with PTSD are weak people and they're not fit for military. And I know Trump. He loves the military.
Yeah,
I know there's no
really
way
does.
He says that.
He really
so
does.
I click on it, and I see the video. This is what he said. He's talking in front of the people, military people, and he says, "Yeah, you know what? A lot of you have seen all that bad stuff that's happening, but some people just can't deal with it because the stuff you guys see is worse than we see in movies." He says, "We have to help these people."
Yeah.
Where did he say they were weak?
That's right.
But you know, the problem is the headline comes out and they say, Trump says he's weak. They don't click on it. And that's the same thing what I said at the beginning. Other people start talking. And now they assume it's truth.
Yeah.
But it's not truth if you just click on it and listen to what he says.
Amazing.
They wrap everything into a negative thing. You know, if I'm with you, you know, if I'm with a Caucasian and I'm telling him, "How much is 8 plus 8? And he says 15. I say, "You're wrong." If we do this in an interview with you, I'm a racist.
I know.
Even if you say it's 15, it's wrong. No, no, no. And now I'm a racist. I go, "Wait a minute. That's actually a very racist comment that you're making right now." Because now you're putting people in boxes.
That's right.
That means that if he's gay, I'm a homophobe now?
That's right.
Why? Do we have to treat him different? Now you put him in a box. I thought everybody was equal. You see, that's what they say, but they don't do it. They put blacks and the Mexicans and they put everybody in a box. Yeah. It shouldn't be like this. It should be one big box.
Everybody's happy. So you support free speech then?
Oh, 100%. Well, we don't have it.
I know.
I was swearing a lot when I came to America, and I go, "Well, you can't say that here. What's free speech?" That's the first thing I said. And then look at now.
Yeah.
You can't say anything.
We got
to
bring it back, though.
Oh, no, we have to.
Come back.
We'll get, you know, we'll come.
So it's time for me to heat up this interview. I have to put you on the hot seat.
Okay.
The hot seat.
You have to answer every question quickly.
Oh, but like one word or three, or so, as fast as I can.
As fast as you can.
Oof, okay. I'll try.
Would you allow your daughter to date a liberal?
Yes, I do, because I don't think they're all bad. I mean, it's only the far left, you know? So, and I know, I do, because I can convince him, I can talk to him, and then we got one on our time.
Which is better, communism or capitalism?
Capitalism.
Does climate change exist?
It does exist, but if we just all do our work, it wouldn't exist. It's look at people throwing their ashtrays next to the car and doing all that stuff. Just be a person, be a man, be a decent person. That's the only thing you need to do, and then everybody will be okay.
Was Jesus politically correct?
100%. So it was only truth. So he was not politically correct. He will tell you the truth if it is the truth. If it's hurting you, he's saying it to you in order to help you.
Who was your favorite fighter of all time?
Well, he fought some fights, but Bruce Lee changed my life because that's when I looked into the movie theater, what I was telling, and it changed my life.
I'm black and slow, but I read a book. Someone gave me a book that Bruce Lee wrote. I read that book, could not put it down.
Yeah.
I even read it twice, it was so good.
Yeah.
It is, I still have it.
It's far ahead.
It's a mind-blowing book.
You know, I have the book, The Tao of Yud Kun Do. This is The Way of Yud Kun Do. And when you go through that book, every single submission, I mean, knee bars, leg locks that people don't even know of, it's all in that book. He was his time way ahead.
Who would be the Democrat Democrat candidate for president in 2020?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't. Biden is maybe not going to make it with the whole thing that's going on right now, because, I mean, I don't know how they can just laugh it off. I mean, imagine Donald Trump Jr. doing that, what his son did. I mean, the world would lit on fire.
Is the pay gap between men and women real?
Yeah, it's real. But, you know, let's break this down, right? If an actor, a guy actor, can pull more people into the movies than a female actor, and I'm not saying like a certain female actor, because there's female actors who make way more money than guy actors as well. But it's all about that, because if they make more money, they automatically get more money. That's capitalism, guys. That's what we're talking
about. Do you trust vaccines?
No, I actually didn't take my flu shot this time. No.
Yeah. No, I'm not really trusting. Is feminism cancer?
Yes, 100%. Well, the original as it was invented, not. But it's way overboard now again. Yeah. I was holding a door open for a lady. She started laughing at me. You need to do the stupid thing. I say, you're nothing special. And she goes, what? I say, I open door for people, for men too. You're nothing special. You know, now I know. Next, I will throw back in your face. I mean, that's so disrespectful. Yeah. I just hold the door open for everybody. And because she's a feminist that tells me, oh, you don't have to hold the door open for me, I'm a woman. Dude, relax. It's like, they go to their bosses and it's yet here, and they come home and they treat their husbands like crap.
Yeah, right.
So, okay.
Is money the root of all evil?
Yeah, for sure. Money and love, well, love the wrong way, you know, because people get murdered for that because they think they're in love with somebody. But money, yeah, that's a bad one.
What do you think of the Me Too movement?
I think it's a very slippery slope. I'm very afraid of it. It has to be there, but there's so many fake ones out there as well. And if they say so many, I'm not talking about 30%. Even if it's 15%, be a guy and get falsely accused. Good luck with the rest of your life. Imagine that happens.
Right.
I mean, and that's what I'm not okay with. I say, oh yeah, get full on of the guy if it's proven without a reasonable doubt, because otherwise, you know, that's the problem right now, you know. You can't do anything anymore. Just truth always prevails.
Well, thank you for sitting in the hot seat. That was fun, huh?
Yeah.
So, do you have anything you want to promote in the books or upcoming events or your school?
No, what I would like to say is this, because it's getting really big right now. Usain Bolt even is doing 3 hours gold medals. I invented the long training device, and I invented it when I was 14 years old when I did track and field. And when I had an asthma attack, I would be like 8 days in bed, like I was talking about. And then after I would resume my track and field, I would always break my running times, which, of course, running was for me always the worst because of my asthma.
Right.
And I go, why is that? And I thought it was the medication. I didn't know what it was until I paid a visit at the doctor's office, and there was a big drawing in a frame on the wall, and it was explained what an infection is. And you think a lung infection is in your lungs. It's not. It's the air pipes that go to the lungs. They're infected.
Right.
And I'm seeing that, 14 years old, I go, oh, wow, I've been working out. I've been working out with resistance, my inhale part. Wait a minute, why did I come up with something that controls the air intake? I can literally train this. And then nine years later, I started making it. I had an inhaler with me for every single fight. I would carry an inhaler with me everywhere I go. 2.5 weeks, my asthma was cured. I have 100% success rate now. Can I clinically prove it? Not yet, because the money isn't there to do it.
Right.
But you read the reviews, and you're going to find it out. So that thing is really close to me because it saves life. No more cortisones, no more pills, no more nothing. You do this for less than 4 minutes a day. That's literally 30 repetitions on the inhaling part. And you'll be amazed. Your asthma is going to be gone. You still start wheezing if you're allergic to something,
right,
but you just plow through it. Because
how can people get it?
O2trainer.com. O2trainer.com.
That's 02.
No, yeah, that's what I did also. I got 02trainer.com just to make sure, because if people knew we're going to make that mistake, and
right,
I got O2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you have fun?
I had a lot of fun. Yeah, that was great. Yeah, thank you.
It was amazing talking to you, man. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you all for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, tweet, share, ring my bell, and Sonny. I absolutely appreciate it. Well, let me hear from you, all right? Thank you so much. Thank you, man. That was amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
That was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Next time on The Fallen State.
I'm a little confused because I thought only Catholic priest would call father.
Well, it's a funny thing. A priest is somebody who celebrates Mass or celebrates the Eucharist.
Do you regret not getting married, having children?
Well, and I'm gay.
You're gay?
Yes.
You all look gay.
I'm gay.
I didn't know you were gay. Have you been with men?
Of course.
Like sexually?
Yes.
Really? I never expected a priest and a father to be gay.
That's what you call stereotyping. That's like if I were to say to you, you're black, where's your fried chicken?
I was at the house and I can't wait to get home to eat it.
This is just bullshit.
You a priest, can you curse?
I just did.
The show is called The Fallen State.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the state as in the United States.
No,
the fallen state.
Yeah. Watching The Fallen State. We need your continued support. Donate to my nonprofit here. Subscribe and like the videos here. And tell everybody and their mama about the show.